Blog Talk Radio.
And all access call inclusive.
Hello, everybody. I am your host, Daniel Moguion. It is March 17th, and this is the NFL Draft Bible's Draft Digest Show. That's right. I'm back hosting after a couple weeks' hiatus. We're in our new studios here in New York, and with me in studio, like old times, is the Reverend Ralph Mancini. Hey, Rev, how's it going? It's great to have you back in studio again.
Absolutely, and a happy St. Patty's Day to one and all.
That's right. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone out there listening, and we've got a packed show for you today. We're going to talk a little bit about our top 10s, how we kind of think that top 10 should break down. Two special guests, our very own. I feel like he's part of our team now, Mike Muhammad, since he's been doing a draft diary with us. We got four draft diaries up on the website, as well as Jaquan Jarrett, who in some respect is our own as well. He's a New Yorker, a hometown kid, just like we are. We're also going to talk a little bit about the pro days, a little bit about our on-the-clock shows, which if you haven't listened to one, folks, you got to check it out. We're officially halfway through. 16 teams have been put on the clock, 30 to 40-minute podcasts, everyone except for one or two. We have a beat writer on from each team, you know, somebody that covers that specific team. Today we're going to be talking about the Oakland Raiders. Also on the website, we have the digital reports on the clock, kind of breaking down each team, each franchise from a draft perspective. You get the five-year plan, the booms, the busts, key free agents, set you up for the offseason. Also, our very own Beau Marchant will be coming on later to talk a little bit about his column on Patrick Peterson. But, Rev, we're going to start with the hot topics, things that have kind of seemed to be, you know, that something everybody's talking about in terms of the draft. And one of those we're going to talk a little bit more with Beau, and that's Patrick Peterson. Could he go number one? Typically, you don't think of a corner going number one overall in the NFL draft, but Patrick Peterson looks like he's our number one player right now on our big board on NFLDraftBible.com. Arguably the most talented player in this draft. I think he's definitely in the top three or four at worst. I don't think you can make an argument for him not being that high. I'm going to just throw one thing out there. I don't want to get into all the reasons that Beau listed. We'll let Beau give you his reasons why he thinks should go number one later on in the show. But I think something he didn't bring up, something that's kind of close to us, and that's the play of one Darrell Revis. I mean, typically you don't think of a corner as a building block of a defense, as a centerpiece of a defense. But with the Jets, who have been highly ranked in both total defense and scoring defense, not just pass defense the last couple of years under Rex Ryan, without really a stellar elite front seven player, it's been Darrell Revis. So maybe that thinking that you can't build around a corner is a misnomer.
Well, you know, here's the other part of the argument, too, is it's so hard to find these types of players. I mean, if you're a team out there that needs a cornerback and you think that maybe you're a couple of players away from being a Super Bowl contender, you just try finding a cornerback out in free agency. There are none out there, and if there are, they're going to cost you an arm and a leg, so why not draft somebody, get them a little bit cheaper, and you have yourself, as Dan said, a shutdown corner, a guy that, you know, if he's as good as Darrell Revis, can be an actual centerpiece of the defense. So, but look, I could totally understand somebody going with Peterson first overall. I don't know if it's going to happen. I say it's probably not going to happen, but you could certainly make an argument for it.
And also, Rev, he's a corner that you kind of like. He's not just a quote-unquote cover corner. He's got good size. He's not afraid to play near the line of scrimmage and play physical. He can be a big hitter when he needs to be. So he's an all-around football player. Now, obviously, it depends what kind of scheme you're in and how you're going to be used. You know, Revis isn't used that way. It's not because he can't do it. It's just the Jets need him more as a cover guy. A guy like a Charles Woodson, who's got better corners around him, they can kind of let him play a little bit more in terms of attacking line of scrimmage and do more things. But Peterson does have that ability if he's asked to do that.
Yeah, and, you know, and the investment that you make in that type of player is it's going to be a good long-term investment, not only a short-term investment, because when these guys enter the league, let's face it, sooner or later, you know, after about 5 or 6 years, they're going to lose a little bit of speed. But here's the type of player that you can move over to safety, and he can be just as good, if not better, at that position than he will be at cornerback. So I think that this is a guy that can not only be a great player, you know, within the next 4 to 5 to 6 years, but I think this guy could be a 10-year pro, a quality 10 to 11-year pro down the road as well.
Yeah, and that's basically what you want. I know Bo had a couple other reasons, and he's going to join us for the last 5 minutes of the show since he kind of did this column. I kind of feel like Bo kind of wrote about this before other people started talking about it. So we'll see what he has to say and his kind of reasons. Now, if you know, you mentioned one of the reasons is a corner is hard to find, which is true. What might be even more difficult to find is a quarterback. You know, and that's why one of the guys that both of us really like, and, you know, from when I used to do the Draft Digest show, which feels like years ago, but it was maybe about a month ago, I think, the last time I actually did a show, I was talking up Christian Ponder. I was talking him up before the Combine. I was talking him up before the Senior Bowl. I've stood with it since the draft season started, since the end of college football ended, that Christian Ponder's my guy. I like him best among this group of quarterbacks, and now that seems to be kind of getting some traction. A lot of people are liking Christian Ponder. We've moved him up to number 10 on our big board, which makes him the highest-ranked quarterback ahead of Blaine Gabbert, ahead of Mr. Cam Newton, the Heisman, the icon, so to speak. Rev, talk a little bit about Christian Ponder and his kind of ascent to, you know, where he, a lot of people are considering him as a now almost a surefire first-round guy.
Yeah, well, the knock on Christian Ponder was is that he doesn't have a big arm, and he doesn't have the biggest arm out there, but his arm is good enough. And if you saw him yesterday during his pro day, we'll get to that later on in the show, I mean, the guy proved that he could make pretty much every throw you need him to make, you know. And the other thing about him is you look at his mechanics, you look at his release, it's very compact, he's got a quick release, he's very smart, he can look off safeties. To me, we take a look at all these other quarterbacks, including Blaine Gabbert, including the Cam Newton, and all of them, I'm sorry, as talented as they are, all of them are projects. Jake Locker, Colin Kaepernick, they're all projects. I don't see any of these quarterbacks stepping in from day one and being that type of franchise player that teams expect them to be. Ponder, I think, is the most NFL-ready out of all of these quarterbacks. I think that his intelligence, his experience, his attitude, his leadership skills are second to none.
Yeah, to me, that's what kind of makes a difference to him, and more than any other position. I mean, we talk about in the NFL, character counts. It counts more at quarterback than anywhere else. There's really no issues with these kids. He's a good kid. He does a lot of the things you want from the face of your franchise in terms of off-the-field stuff. I got a chance to meet him in December because he was part of the William Campbell Trophy. He was one of the nominees. He's a bright kid, graduated school in 2.5 years, something also you want. So, you know, while some of these other quarterbacks, not only are they projects in terms of their physical abilities, a couple of the key guys have, you know, question marks surrounding them in terms of the intangibles. And Ponder, to me, seems to be an A across the board when it comes to the intangibles in the position where that's most critical. And Rev, you know, another quarterback that's in the news this week is Blaine Gabbert, who's having his pro day today. You know, we read online that he met up with the Buffalo Bills, had dinner with them. A lot of teams obviously are talking about him. He's not in our top 10, but most people have him projected as a top 10 guy. You know, Rev, I got to be honest, I find it funny sometimes how, you know, 5-6 different sources or evaluators at the same time come to the conclusion that someone should elevate into the top 10. Like, you know, they all had the same epiphany at the same moment. Blaine Gabbert, what are your thoughts on him? And you know, could Buffalo be a good fit? Will he even be there for the Bills when their, you know, number comes?
I personally don't think he's going to be there. I think he's going to be taken first overall. But with Blaine Gabbert, yeah, I could see what you're saying. There's a lot of copycat tendencies on the part of a lot of teams. But, you know, this year works in his favor because Andrew Luck decided not to come out and stay in Stanford for another year. And so who is the next man? Who is the next man up? You know, there's no real definite, absolute number one guy who's like head and shoulders above the rest. But Blaine Gabbert probably is the closest thing, you know, in terms of his size and his athleticism, his intelligence and all of that. But, you know, again, this is not a finished product. You know, this is a guy who is going to need some time to acclimate himself to the league. You know, he's a guy that played in a spread system, a guy that's going to have to learn how to take snaps from center. You know, there are a lot of different things. You know, he rushes some of his throws as well. He makes bad decisions as well. He's not a perfect quarterback. But he has the tools that you can work with, and hopefully a year or two down the road, he will be, you know, hopefully a top 5, top 6, or at least a top 10 quarterback in the league. But by no means is he the finished product. You know, no, by no means is he even close to what Andrew Luck would be if he decided to come out this year.
Yeah, I got to agree with that. I mean, he's not even close to Luck. So you're saying he's kind of – he could benefit from Luck going back to school, kind of the same way Mark Sanchez benefited 2 years ago when Sam Bradford decided to go back to school. Now, it didn't make Sanchez the number one guy, but it helped elevate him to be that number two guy in that draft in terms of the quarterback position and help him go fifth overall to the Jets. I mean, you can make a good case that, you know, if Bradford was in that draft, that Sanchez might not have been a top 10 pick. That definitely helped him. So I agree with you. I think I could see Gabbert be a beneficiary of Luck leaving. But as you said, my opinion, not even close. I mean, Gabbert may turn out to be a good quarterback, but when you want to compare him to an Andrew Luck, not even close. As I said, when Luck returned, even when the season's over, Carolina found a way to lose once again. They had another loss to the tally of losses in 2010 when Luck decided to go back to school. All right, Rev, I know there are a couple other hot topics this week. We'll try to get to them later on in the show if we can. I don't want to shortchange ourselves when we talk about our top tens. Rev, I'll kick it off by giving my top five, and then you can give me your top five. As I said, we got Peterson number one on the site. I went with him number one overall. My man out of Auburn, Nick Fairley, number two. I know there's some questions about him, but kid's a beast. I don't have a problem with his motor at all. Staying with an SEC interior lineman, Marcel Darius out of Alabama, number three. Another SEC player, A.J. Green, the number one offensive player, in my opinion, wide receiver out of Georgia. And then Robert Quinn, number five, out of North Carolina as a defensive end. I'm guessing you don't have him ranked as high as I do, but, you know, I guess throw me your top five and we'll kind of see how they compare.
Yeah, my list is completely different. I actually have Blaine Gabbert going number one to the Carolina Panthers, and you can make that argument for going cornerback, going with Peterson there. But you know something? Is Carolina going to be in this position ever again? They might, but they might not be. You know, they're in a prime position to take the best quarterback out there. You know, whether you like him or not, Blaine Gabbert is a guy with tremendous talent. He is way better than what they have right now in Mr. Jimmy Clausen. So, you know, go for the gusto. Go for the quarterback right now when you need him. The Denver Broncos, I have been going with Daquan Bowers basically because they go into a 4-3 system. They need as many defensive ends as they can use, and Daquan Bowers is the best out there. The Buffalo Bills, I have them actually going with Nick Fairley. I think him and Darius are very close, but I think Fairley's got a little bit more upside, a little bit more athleticism, and he's got that mean streak that you love as well. And then Cincinnati, I have them going with Marcel Darius at number four. And then Arizona, I have them going with our buddy, our friend, Patrick Peterson.
Well, I think the whole Quinn Bowers is a really interesting thing, and you know, they really have a definite different skill set. You know, in terms of coming off last season, you know, Quinn obviously did not play, so that, you know, that can never help your stock. But as we've seen, maybe it shouldn't hurt your stock as much either. We've seen guys like an Antonio Cromartie, like a Jermaine Gresham, like a Rob Gronkowski, like, you know, to some extent a Sam Bradford, miss an entire year or almost an entire season and still be very productive as a rookie. You know, Bowers is more, you know, he's bigger, he's stronger, he's stouter, he's probably better against the run. But I think if you're looking for that elite premier edge pass rusher, I think Quinn fits that mold better.
Even in a 4-3?
Even in a 4-3, yeah, I think so. He's a little lighter. You know, he's more of that John Abraham type guy if you're looking for an NFL type analogy, where he's definitely more of an edge speed guy, which is obviously why a lot of people project him as a potential outside linebacker in 3-4 schemes. And like I said, he's probably never going to be as productive as a Bowers is against the run. But, you know, part of me does question how effective Bowers will be as a pure pass rusher. And although he's an elite all-around player, he could be that type of player. Typically, when you go on a defensive end in the top five, you're looking for a guy that's going to give you upwards of 10 sacks, maybe even 15 sacks a season.
The only problem I have with taking Quinn that high is the fact that, you know, he comes with the off-the-field questions, the fact that, you know, he had those transgressions in college. you know, taking those diamond earrings or whatever other gifts that he received. And the other thing is that he comes with some health questions as well, some health concerns. You know, he was diagnosed with a brain tumor at one point, and from what we hear, the guy is healthy and sound and all of that. But, I mean, those question marks come into play here. And then the other thing with Daquan Bowers also is I just think, you know, just by watching film, watching games every Saturday, I think Daquan Bowers was the more productive guy. And so I'm going to go with Bowers. I think he's more of a short thing. I don't have any questions regarding his off-the-field activities. He's a good kid, comes from a solid home, a solid family. And from what I hear and when I hear him talk, he sounds very mature. I think he is more worthy of being a higher draft pick than your boy from North Carolina.
I think, you know, I hear what you're saying with Quinn. And, you know, when you're splitting hairs between guys that are very highly ranked, closely ranked, you know, you do have to be fair and take everything into consideration. But I don't know if I'd say Quinn has a character question. He does seem to be a good kid, you know, outside of that one issue. And let's be honest, I mean, how many kids at that age, you know, would turn down
diamond earrings?
Yeah. How many kids would say no? I'm not condoning it. I'm not saying it. He made a right decision. He should have been smarter. I think all those kids should have been smarter, especially when you decide to pass up NFL riches to come back to school. This is more for the seniors than Quinn. You should be smarter since, you know, if you really wanted just to go for the money, a lot of those guys could have declared after.
Yeah, but Quinn wasn't a fringe guy. You know, he knew that, you know, he had an NFL future.
Yeah.
He knew he had those riches coming to him. It was only a year or two down the road. So, you know, what was this haste in accepting these gifts? You know, I don't get it.
I think you can chalk it up to, you know, dumb decision by a young kid. To round up my top 10, I like Julio Jones as my sixth best player, Daquan Bowers, who you mentioned out of Clemson, who we talked about, Prince Amukamara, second best corner out of Nebraska, number 8, Von Miller, who a lot of people seem to have in their top 2 or 3, kind of squeaks into my top 10. I'm a little concerned about his lack of girth at the next level. He's definitely going to have to be an outside linebacker. And also even kind of the fact that he really made his season in about like 3 or 4 games to end the year, which he was, you know, unbelievably dominant. He did have an injury to start the year. So, you know, maybe that was for cause, you know, there was good cause for that. But he definitely did put up most of his numbers in his senior year towards the end, which makes me kind of worry a little bit. And then number 10, I still like Mark Ingram a lot. You know, I know he probably won't be a top 10 pick overall. I know he doesn't have that flashy speed. But, and you know, Rev, I don't love to say, well, he's going to be the next so-and-so. He reminds me of this guy. I'm not a big fan of that. I'll do that just because I know fans like to hear that, particularly if they haven't seen these guys play and you're just learning about the draft picks if you're more of an NFL fan than a college fan. But how can you watch Mark Ingram play and not think Emmitt Smith? With his vision, with his patience, the same body type, the low center of gravity, you know, knowing how to use that offensive line and kind of maximizing your physical ability. It's not always about being the biggest, fastest, strongest. He just finds a way to make it happen. So Ingram does crack my top 10.
Well, I'm a big fan of his as well. But, you know, looking at this second half of the top 10, you know, I'm looking at the big knee at the quarterback position, and you know something, I left Von Miller out, shame on me, but, you know, I'm looking at it this way. I think Cleveland's going to go with Julio Jones. I agree with you on that. He's that game changer at receiver, that physical guy that they need that can help out their young quarterback, Colt McCoy, tremendously. I got San Francisco going with Ryan Mallett, believe it or not. I see him going a little bit higher than a lot of people are projecting.
Wow.
Yeah, I know he comes with, you know, his question marks regarding his character concerns, and, you know, he's not the most efficient quarterback either. But you're looking at a guy who's got tremendous size, a tremendous arm, that can make magnificent, unbelievable throws. And let's face it, San Francisco needs a quarterback, and if they don't take one early, where are they going to find one?
I know it's been a while since the Bay Area produced someone like MC Hammer, but they're going for the next Eminem, huh, with the seventh overall pick.
Well, I look at it this way. You know, Jim Harbaugh is coming in there. He wants to instill, you know, that traditional physical type of offense with the running game. And, you know, bringing in a guy with a big, strong arm like that can help out that running game tremendously. So down the road, I think Mallett with Harbaugh in San Francisco can be a winning combination if they develop him correctly. Tennessee, I have them going with Cam Newton. I know that we're not big fans of his, But you look at this guy, you look at the size, you look at that magic smile of his, you look at all those things, you put them together, and this is a guy that definitely has some star quality, some potential star quality, more of a boom or bust type of guy. But I think that in the long run, he will be better than Vince Young. I know that's not saying much, but hey.
Do you think there's any hesitation at all off the Vince Young to go Cam Newton?
Yeah, I could see that, but that's why they're going to do their homework. And I actually think that Cam Newton is a better athlete. I think he's got a better body type. And again, they have a guy in there in Kerry Collins that, you know, can sort of like, you know, guide him through. And then finally, rounding out my top 10, I have Prince Amukamara going to Dallas. They're going to move him to safety. And then Washington, I have him going with Christian Ponder at quarterback.
My man, Christian Ponder, he cracks the top 10, and he still is only the fourth quarterback taken in your view. But four quarterbacks in the top 10, Rev. I know we have Mike Muhammad on the line, so we're going to bring him on. But if we have some time later, we're going to have to delve into that. You know, a lot of love with the quarterbacks. Good thing we have a defensive player coming on. Joining us now, you're listening to the NFL Draft Bible's Draft Digest Show. And joining us is our man, Mike Muhammad. Mike, how's it going? How's everything?
It's going really well. How are you guys?
I'm doing pretty good. Great to have you on, Mike. You know, last time we heard from you in the draft diary, you were back in Berkeley. You were going to CU Sushi. You were checking out Zachary's Pizza. Where are you at now?
Yeah, I'm actually still in Berkeley. Just working out, staying in shape, getting stronger, and, you know, kind of enjoying college without having to go to class.
Well, it isn't. See, this is another smart kid. He's also a William V. Campbell nominee, and he knows what it's all about, going to college without going in class. See, the problem is I tried that before I graduated. That was the problem.
Hey, Mike, Ralph Mancini here. You know, you've had a long, hard off season. You've participated in the combine, in the East-West Shrine Game. You know, you've given a lot of different interviews as well. You know, not to mention the fact that you've been training all this time. What would you say was the highlight of your off season? What was your favorite part of the off season? Now that you look back.
Yeah, it definitely would have to be the combine. You know, that's kind of what you were working towards the whole 2 months, you know, among other things, but the combine was kind of a big show. And after the 2 months of training, just finally being able to get there and kind of show, just to show what you can do and everything that you've been working towards, it was, you know, that was definitely my highlight.
Hey, Mike, you've also done the pro day as well. So, you know, for people, you know, a lot of the fans out there who listen, they get a chance to watch the combine on the NFL Network. They kind of know what it's about to some extent, and you did a great job in your draft diary of giving us even more insight to that. How, you know, the pro day we don't see as much, especially the fans, they don't get to see it as much. How does the pro day really differ compared to the combine?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the biggest thing is that, you know, there's not a national audience, you're not on TV. But I mean, at the pro day, you do all of the same things. But I mean, as opposed to the combine where you're there 4 days and you do interviews and a whole bunch of other physical tests, you know, pro day is just 1 day. It's just all the field tests and the bench press and the jumping and all that. And it's, you know, it's basically a mini combine.
And from a player's perspective, are you guys kind of cognizant of that there's, you know, less national attention and all that stuff? Does it make it a little less pressurized? Does it make it easier for you to perform?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's definitely, you know, there's less stress. You know, there's less weight on your shoulders. But at the same time, you know, you don't want to take it too lightly. There are still a lot of coaches, a lot of scouts there. And, you know, they're looking for anything. You know, if you mess up or have a bad performance, you know, they're definitely going to take note of that. So you definitely want to put your best foot forward no matter what the situation.
Yeah, also, take us back to that combine experience in Indianapolis. I know that you interviewed with a number of teams. Was that whole experience, was it exciting? Was it boring? Did you find yourself having to answer the same questions over and over again? How do you view that whole ordeal? That whole, well, if it is an ordeal, how do you view that experience?
Yeah. Well, kind of what I've been telling people is that it's the most fun that you only want to have once in your life because, you know, it is. It's very stressful. It's a lot of work. You know, you're up late and then up early. You know, it's one of those once-in-a-lifetime experiences that not very many people get to go through and can say that they've done that. So it was a special time, and you know, I really enjoyed the whole process, but at the same time, you know, I'm not sure that's something that I want to go through again.
Also, looking back at your college career, you're known as the type of linebacker that always puts himself in the right position to make plays. How did you prepare yourself week in and week out to be that guy who was always at the right place at the right time?
First it starts off with, you know, your film study, knowing the plays. That way, you know, when you see things on the field, you know, you're not thinking, you're just reacting, and everything else, it just comes naturally. And then just working hard and, you know, not giving up on plays, just always trying to get to the ball and just being consistent and dependable for your team.
You're listening to the NFL's Draft Bible Draft Digest Show. I'm your host, Daniel Moglione. With me is the Reverend Ralph Mancini. On the line, our special guest linebacker, Mike Muhammad from the University of Cal, the Golden Bears. Mike was an honorable mention All Pac-10 in 2008, first team in 2009, second team in 2010. He finished college career fourth all-time in tackles for the Golden Bears with 340 tackles, including 20 for a loss, 7 sacks, 7 interceptions, very versatile player. Mike, let me ask you, you know, you played a lot of 3-4 defense in Cal. That's something that a lot of teams are doing in the NFL right now. I think it's about half the league. It's really changed. It's been in vogue. Are you seeing a lot of interest from 3-4 teams in terms of you fitting into their schemes?
Yes and no. I mean, I've seen interest from both 3-4 and 4-3. Some teams like me as an inside backer, some teams like me as an outside backer. Either way, you know, I'm comfortable playing both because I've done both in both systems at Cal. I'm just excited to get out there and, you know, wherever, you know, whoever picks me up and puts me out there, you know, I'm going to be happy to just to get out there and play.
Can you let us know if there are any, you know, specific teams that you're feeling a good vibe from, that you, you know, do you have any workouts or visits scheduled?
I do have a workout scheduled with the Falcons right now, and that's the only one that I have planned right now. So hopefully, you know, I might get a few more, but I know with the whole CBA and the uncertainty, you know, a lot of teams are trying to cut back. So we'll see. I'm just kind of remaining optimistic, and I have the Falcons right now, but nobody else.
And also, Mike, you know, you're known as a player that brings a lot of good intangibles to the table as well. What do you bring to an NFL team in terms of your character?
Yeah, you know, I'm a person that you only have to tell something to once, and then, you know, you're not going to have to worry about me ever again. You know, I'm going to do things the right way, and I'm going to see things through. You know, I'm always going to finish the job, and, you know, I'm not going to be a problem in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, great. And what do you remember most from your college days? What are you going to miss the most now that you look back?
I think the biggest thing is just, you know, being around my friends, my roommates, just the camaraderie that you build, just kind of being with, you know, your friends and your teammates and whatnot. You know, it's, you know, now that we're all going to be kind of moving on, you know, it's going to be very different. And, you know, just being close to everybody, you know, that's something that I'm definitely going to miss.
Hey, Mike, before we let you go, I mean, we're a couple of months removed from the season. I do a lot of college football. That's kind of why we met back in December when you were in New York for the William B. Campbell thing. So can you let us know, can you come clean? Were you guys laying down a little bit against Oregon to slow them down? Can we get the truth here?
No, not at all. I mean, we had 300-pounders up there. You know, they're cramping up. But I mean, if people want to say that, then they can say that. But, I mean, you can't take away the fact that we shut down their offense. And I'm sticking by that.
I figured I'd take a shot. Maybe I could get, you know, a little, you know, breaking news here or something. I figured I'd take a shot with you. Mike, thanks a lot. It's a pleasure to have you on. It was great to meet you back in December. We love the draft diaries. Go to NFLDraftBible.com. You can check out Mike Muhammad's draft diaries. There are four up there. You know, he tells you about the whole East West Shrine Game experience, the combine. He talks about what he likes off the field, watching Pawn Wars. You know, so all great stuff. Mike, thanks a lot. It's a pleasure.
Definitely. Thank you.
Best of luck. All right, that is linebacker from University of California, Mike Muhammad, and we're going to stay on the defensive side of the ball. And as I said, Ralph, you know, one guy, both of these guys, we kind of feel like are one of our own. You know, Mike is on our website a lot with the draft diaries, and next is Jaquan Jarrett, who's a New York kid just like us. You know, I'm a Queens boy. You're a Brooklyn boy. Mm-hmm. So Brooklyn's in the house completely here with you and Jaquan. Jaquan Jarrett, how's it going, my man? Thanks for coming on.
It's doing good, man. I'm doing good. How you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. We're happy to have a New York City kid on, a lot of NYC love. And as I said, my partner here, Ralph, is also a Brooklyn kid as well, so we're happy to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, Jaquan, you know, you're known as a hard-hitting safety with good range. You know, you went to Temple University. You know, back when you first signed up to go to Temple, it was coming off of some tough times. You know, what made you want to sign with Temple, and did you have a good feeling about it? And it all turned out for the best eventually, but, I mean, did you have, like, other schools going after you, you know, at one point? Or you know, was Temple really, like, the biggest school that was clamoring for your services?
Yeah, it was kind of an easy decision for me, being that Temple was the only school that offered me a scholarship coming out of high school. So when Coach Golden offered me the scholarship, it was easy for me to just accept it because I didn't have nowhere else to go but to a prep school in Connecticut.
Hmm. And what were your initial impressions of the coaching staff over there? I mean, what are your memories of Coach Golden? I mean, he had some great things to say about you. He was actually quoted as saying that you were the best tackler that he's ever coached up until now. So, you know, talk about that experience with Coach Golden. How has he helped you develop?
Coach Golden and that staff helped me become a great human being, a great man on and off the field. They got us involved in community service events, got us helping kids out, and they just helped us realize that there's more to life after football, and that's what they instilled in us as young athletes. And as far as being an athlete, Coach Golden, he made it his duty to make sure that personally, I was in shape because I struggled with conditioning coming into college, and that was one of the foundations of becoming a smarter, stronger, more disciplined player, and that's one of the things he focuses on.
Hey, Jaquan, this is Dan again, and you have your pro day tomorrow at Temple. Let me ask you, what do you plan on doing tomorrow? Are you going to be doing most of the drills, or are you just going to stick to position drills? What's tomorrow's schedule look like for you?
Yeah, tomorrow's schedule, I'm just going to sit and just wait around, chill on my teammates, and do just about all the position drills.
So you're going to stand on your 40 time and your vertical and all that other stuff?
Yeah.
And let me ask you, you know, we were talking to Mike Muhammad before, and he kind of gave us a little insight in terms of how the combine and pro day are different. You know, as you were preparing for your pro day, how did that change compared to your pro preparation leading up to the combine?
It's just a little different preparation. More basically, I'm just going to be focusing on little technique things right now, just for the drill work, working on the hips, covering, range, things like that. More football related drills than a combine related activities. Focusing on more like the 40 and testing wise. So getting back to just working on just straight football-related drills.
Yeah, and also you're known as one of the big leaders, at least back, you know, during your college days. You were known as as a leader, as a guy that motivated other players around him as well. Talk about some of the things that you did to prepare for games, and you know, what were some of the things that you did to make those around you a little bit better as well?
I think it starts off just on the practice field, just getting out there, with showing, having a lot of enthusiasm, enjoying practice, getting out there, having a great attitude. It's gonna bring your teammates along with you and want to make them get better in practice. And then how you practice is how you play. So if you perform great in practice, this should easily transition over into the game. So a lot of players fed off my energy in practice, and then they just had a great practice and they were able to perform in the games.
And let's stick with that theme a little bit about your teammates and things. You know, in addition to yourself, Muhammad Wilkerson's gotten a lot of love, the defensive lineman as well as linebacker Pina Joseph. You know, being a classman with those guys, being a teammate with those guys for a couple of years, what can you tell us about them and, you know, their abilities to make a difference at the next level?
They have tremendous ability to be impact players on whatever team they get drafted to. They both are smart, talented athletes, both athletic, and both can make tremendous plays. And they're just phenomenal as human beings, got great personalities, good people to hang around, just to be around.
And you're listening to NFL Drafts Bible's Draft Dodgers show. With us right now is Jaquan Jarrett, safety out of Temple. He was the leading tackler last year with 74 stops, including 2 tackles for a loss, 2 interceptions, 4 passes defense, 1 forced fumble, and 1 fumble recovery.
Yeah, also, Jaquan, I want to also ask you, now, you mentioned in an earlier interview that one of the things that you're going to be working on in the offseason is just improving your overall coverage technique. Are there any particular players that, you know, you kind of like watch every now and then to pick up, you know, certain tricks of the trade from? Tell us about that.
I like watching Ed Reed. He performs great on the field. Got great cover skills, great range, and just an all-around great athlete. So when he's out there, I like to study his game and a little bit of Troy Polamalu, because they are playmakers. And when they're out there in the field, they make plays for their teams, and that's how they win.
That's 2 choices that aren't too bad there, every Troy Polamalu. Jaquan, you know, I know your pro day's tomorrow, so you're probably going to be talking to some teams there. Do you have any visits scheduled or any workouts with any NFL teams?
I got a workout for the Patriots on the 24th.
Okay, working out for the Patriots there on the 24th. And let me ask you a couple, before we let you go, a couple of New York-centric type questions. So are you a Jets fan or a Giants fan?
I'm just a New York fan, period. Any team in New York, I support.
All right, fair enough. So if it's any team in New York, or, you know, as I mentioned, you're a Brooklyn guy, Ralph's a Brooklyn guy. Another Brooklyn kid is Carmelo Anthony. Were you pumped up when the Knicks made that deal and brought Carmelo back home?
I'm excited for the Knicks just to bring some life back into New York. So I'm hoping they can do some real positive things this year.
Have you been able to watch any basketball, or has it been too busy with getting ready for all the draft stuff?
Yeah, I've been keeping up with the basketball, watching Carmelo Anthony play, and watching the Miami Heat play. So I watch a lot of basketball.
And how is it there in Philly? I mean, there's a lot of rivalries. There's a lot of hatred in Philly for the New York team. So how does that work for you being in Philly the last few years?
It's been kind of good. I have my ups and downs when the Yankees beat the Phillies. So I'll go in class with my Yankee hat. They ain't like it. Everybody hated it when I came in there with it, but I enjoyed it. Some days they come at me when the Eagles beat the Giants, so it got to something now.
See, it's a little easier for you. I'm a Mets fan. I would be suffering probably the last 4 years in Philly. And one more before we let you go. You know, being a Brooklyn guy, I'm sure Jay-Z's your guy, but let's take out Brooklyn. What's your favorite performer from New York outside of Brooklyn guys?
Can you repeat that?
What's your favorite artist, your favorite performer from New York City who's not a Brooklyn guy? So we'll take out the home borough.
Oh, who is not a Brooklyn guy? One of my favorite artists is Lloyd Banks.
All right, that's not a bad choice. All right, Jaquan, I'm a nasty Nas guy myself. You know, go back to his original name, but that's not a bad choice. All right, Jaquan, thanks a lot for joining us, giving us some time. We want to wish you the best of luck tomorrow at the Pro Day. Show those scouts what you can do.
Thank you.
Break away.
All right, and that is Jaquan Jarrett, the safety out of Temple, I believe our fourth-ranked free safety, fifth-ranked safety overall. I think right now we got him rated as a third-round type guy. Definitely somebody that's shown what he could do, I think could be a starter at the next level. You know, I think both of these guys could start at the next level, no doubt about it.
Well, you know, the one thing that Jaquan can do that a lot of other safeties unfortunately can't do, even in the NFL, is tackle. He's got great form. And not only does he bring you down, I mean, he really lays the wood. So I think this is a great year for him to come out because, you know, quite frankly, if you take a look at the entire landscape of defenders out there, defensive backs, there are not a lot of great safeties out there. So I think that automatically by him coming out, he vaults himself, you know, within the first three or four safeties, I think, if you had to rank them from, you know, 1 to 10 or 1 to 50 or 1 to 20. So I think he finds himself in a good position, and I think he's going to get drafted probably within the first three or four rounds, I think.
You know, it's interesting. You know, I know you love the tackling guys, so, you know, you like to focus on tackling. It's been always a pet peeve of yours when a guy isn't a great tackler, but also 10-inch hands, which is, if you look at the other safeties, you know, this is something people don't talk a lot about. It's, you know, usually it's the 40 time, that type of stuff. But his hands are one of the biggest hands against safety. So, you know, you want somebody that can jump up and pluck that interception. He's got those big mittens to do that.
Well, usually when you look at 10-inch hands, it's usually the quarterbacks that have those big mitts. You usually don't find that in defensive backs. So that's a big, big plus right there.
And my bad, we got somebody on the chat room here. And they brought up, how about Temple beating Penn State? And I can't believe I forgot to bring it up. Buzzer beater by a kid Hernandez shooting a guard made the shot there. So sorry about that from the Joker. I should have brought that up, but Jaquan completely slipped my mind bringing up the big Temple win today over the in-state rival, Keystone rival, your Penn State Nittany Lions, actually, I should say, Reverend. And you're going to be talking to Evan Royster, I believe, sometime this weekend about his pro day, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's coming up this weekend.
All right, Rev, before we go on to the pro days, I'm going to talk to him about the pro days. Four quarterbacks in the top 10? Do you really think it's going to happen? I feel like we always do this. And then, you know, we did it last year. I'm guilty of it as well, where you think these quarterbacks are going to go high. And then I think it seems like teams have been a little smarter. And that's, you know, Jimmy Clausen was somebody this time of year people were saying, oh, he could be a top 10 guy. And he ended up dropping to, you know, like the middle of the second round.
Yeah, I hear you. And there are not a lot of great quarterbacks in this draft. But if you take a look at a team like the Washington Redskins, what's your alternative? Rex Grossman. If you look at the San Francisco 49ers, what's your alternative? Alex Smith. So, as I said, these guys that are going to come in, like them or not, you know, they don't have to be the savior from day one. Hey, look, if they come in early, eventually you're going to have to play them, maybe in week 8, week 9, week 10. But, I mean, you know, if you have a serviceable guy there, if Alex Smith can actually, you know, be serviceable this year, you might want to sit down a Ryan Mallett for the first year and then have him play in his second year. I mean, the skills are there. You might not like the fact that he makes mistakes, he makes the wrong reads, he throws some interceptions, but this is a guy you can mold. It's not just about drafting a guy and thinking that he's a finished product. It's not just about drafting him. It's about molding him. It's about developing him. It's all about player development. And a lot of these coaches, they have big egos. They think, you know what? Well, you know, this guy, and this guy don't like him, but get him in my camp, I can transform him. I can turn him into my type of player.
But weren't there teams that you could have said that about last year, like the Buffalo Bills? I think perfect example. I think a lot of mock drafts a year ago today, with, you know, still 5-6 weeks away from the draft, had Jimmy Clausen going number 9 to the Buffalo Bills. I mean, ultimately, as much as you need a quarterback, you need a good quarterback, not just a quarterback. You don't need the next bust. You need somebody who's going to come through. And I think we've seen in recent memory more teams be a little more judicious and not only look at the upside of a lot of these guys, but look at the downside as well. That's why I still don't think it's a slam dunk that Cam Newton's going top 10, because I think people are going to look both sides, not just the scenario where everything breaks right. What if half the things break right? What if a lot of things break wrong? What are you left with then?
In my opinion, Cam Newton shouldn't even go in the first round if it were up to me. I'm just saying there's going to be some team out there that's going to fall in love with him. whether it's his size, whether it's his jumping ability, whether it's his arm, his million-dollar smile. There's some team that's going to fall in love with him. Hey, we were all talking about Tim Tebow last year. We weren't big fans of him. But, you know, there was that one team that reached out and grabbed him in the first round. So I think you could have that same type of effect this year, especially in a quarterback class that's not deep, because if you don't take these guys early, they're not going to be there in the second round.
And we do get runs on certain positions where if one guy goes earlier than he's supposed to, could kind of trigger something, get a lot of teams more panicky. Couple of comments from the chat room. How come more NFL cornerbacks aren't moved to free safety, especially bigger corners late in their careers? Honestly, Rev, I think this is something that if you know the listeners have been listening to us for a couple of years, that's something we've talked about for a while, why more teams don't do that in the NFL. Take that corner, that big corner, move him to safety. It's become a pass-first league. So the more guys you have out there that can play the pass, I think to some extent the better. You know what I mean? I think often you have these safeties that are supposed to be the last line of defense, and they're weak in coverage. They get burned too often, and that's how you give up a lot of big plays. And as much as, you know, stopping the run is important and critical in the NFL, it's become a pass-first league, and I think that's, you know, I think more teams should go in that direction.
Well, it's not only that. A lot of these defenses, they're going to the 3-4 a lot more, and a lot of these 3-4 defenses, they take a lot of chances. They like to blitz a lot. Well, guess what? If you're going to blitz, you better leave those – you better get a good cornerback that could cover man-to-man. That, you know, you better get somebody out there that can cover somebody on an island. And, you know, that's what the Jets' defense is based on. The reason why they take a lot of chances, the reason why they blitz a lot of these 3-4 teams do that, is because they do have those types of cornerbacks that can play man-to-man, that, they, you know, they can stay in the receiver's hip pocket and free things up for a lot of the other people out there and give more options to the defensive coordinator to draw up more schemes and be more original. So I think it's a win-win if you find that right type of corner to bring them in there. I think a guy like Peterson can come in and he can, you know, take a defense and bring it up a few notches.
Now, at the same time, though, you know, with the Peterson, who some believe, you know, does have the abilities to play a safety if you wanted to have him there. And, you know, even Prince Amakimara, you brought him up, Dallas drafting him and making him a safety. You know, and this is something also that was brought up in the chat room, the value of safeties, the importance of safeties. Do you really see a team, you know, drafting a kid top 10? I still feel there's the perception of that there's greater value playing corner and being a cover guy than being a safety. I feel like that's more of like a second resort, that if the guy doesn't make it as a corner, then we could shift them to the safety position, kind of what the Jets did last year with a Dwight Lowry. He struggled in coverage of man-to-man. Let's try to put him at safety where he won't be as singled out, or if he is, now he's covering a tight end rather than a wide receiver.
I don't know. I think when you take a look, you know, we brought up a few guys before in our interview with Jaquan. You know, you bring up guys like, you know, Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu. You know, that safety position isn't – these safeties that play today, they're more athletic. They're bigger playmakers. And so I think that you're seeing a little bit of a changing of the guard there. If you do have a good safety, you know, here's a guy that can improve your offense. He could also be a leader on your team. And, you know, you take a look at a guy like Troy Polamalu. I know he was, you know, kind of banged up this past year, but you could really see the difference between that Pittsburgh defense in most years, you know, when, you know, Polamalu actually played versus when he wasn't in the lineup. So I think, you know, if you got the right type of player there and his position is a free safety, I think it could be a big difference maker. And that's why I would move Amakimara there. I would be a little hesitant, you know, putting him at corner. Hey, and if you see a better corner out there, then take the corner. But Amakimara, he looks like an NFL safety to me. He looks like a playmaker, great ball skills. I just don't see him as a cornerback, and I think that would be his best position.
Yeah, I think you could see safeties going in the top 10 in general if they are elite. I think we've seen it in the past, you know, with big-time prospects like a Sean Taylor, like, you know, Roy Williams, who didn't really pan out at Oklahoma. This year's draft doesn't have that type of guy. You know, Raheem Moore is probably the top.
Look, Eric Berry last year.
Yeah, Eric Berry, right, just a year ago went very high. You know, I thought he might have been arguably the best player in last year's draft. But, you know, typically – there just doesn't seem to be that many safeties that appear to be that kind of elite difference-making guy year in and year out. And as much as Raheem Moore has been a playmaker at UCLA, he doesn't look like a top-10 pick. And I don't think it's because he's a safety. That it's not a knock on safeties. It's just that he just, you know, doesn't project to be that highly valued. He's more of a late first-round, early second-round type player.
Yeah, honestly, I don't even view Raheem Moore as a first-round pick. I mean, you take a look at him play, he misses a lot of tackles. And he's not the type of guy that safety that's an intimidator. I think that, you know, in my opinion, a safety has to bring that component to the table. Not only does he have to be an instinctive guy that's got to get his hands on a lot of balls, he also has to be an intimidator out there. He's got to be the complete package in order for me to take him in the first round.
Yeah, I'll favor the pass defense, ball hawking safety a little more than you. If he's that good at that aspect of the game, I think that makes it easier for everybody else to be that defensive guy. So now if your other safety, if your strong safety is more of a hard hitter or a tackler, or that also might allow you to not have to use your linebackers in coverage as much as teams are forced to. So I think, you know, there is value in that as well. All right, Rev, I know we're under 10 minutes here. Bo's going to be calling in a couple of minutes. Before we move on to that, pro days, you know, give me a couple of guys. I know you were focused in a lot on yesterday's pro days, a couple of guys that kind of stood out to you and maybe helped their stock yesterday.
Well, the guy that we brought up before, Evan Royster, I thought he looked more at ease than he did at the combine. He ran a 4.54, which was a big improvement from his 4.65 in the 40-yard dash in Indianapolis. And, you know, look, he justifies his combine time, you know, with he said he claimed that he had his hammy that was tweaked before the combine. Whether or not that was the case, he definitely seemed a lot more comfortable at his pro day, which is usually the case with these players. And then also, an unheralded guy, Eric Gordon from Michigan State, had a huge day with 30 NFL personnel men in attendance from 20 teams. He had a 40.5-inch vertical, which is amazing for a linebacker, pretty much for anybody at any position. That's very impressive. 25 reps on the bench. He ran two sub-4.6 40-yard dashes. You know, he's a little bit on the small side for a linebacker, 5'11.5", 225 pounds. But I think that he definitely raised his stock.
Do you think that sub-4.6 there, I know he's somebody that a lot of people looked at, speaking of safeties, as a potential safety, do you think he could end up being there at the next level? I know I think at one of the All-Star games, they had him working out a little bit as safety, not just linebacker.
Yeah, I could definitely see him being an in-the-box type of safety. I don't know what his coverage skills are, but being that type of strong safety that you're going to put in the box, he could certainly do that, I think. And, you know, then some of the other guys, you know, Greg Jones didn't have a great offseason. He ran 2.47s. You know, with Greg Jones, he's not a three-down linebacker. But if you watched him play, you know, during his college days, he was never that type of player to begin with. So I have no qualms about him. I think, you know, he's probably like a fourth-round pick, but I think he's a solid guy. And in Illinois, actually, Martez Wilson surprisingly struggled. You know, here is the guy that was the fastest linebacker in the combine, and he just did not bring his A game yesterday. He demonstrated a lot of stiffness, some bad footwork, bad hands. As a matter of fact, he actually dropped interceptions. He's had this negative attitude where he just didn't even look like he wanted to be there. I don't know what the story was with him. You know, here was a guy that, you know, was on his way up in terms of his draft stock, and I think he showed some of his warts. He showed a little stiffness out there, which is the most concerning thing. But you know, guys like Corey Legit and Michael LeShore, the running back, they both stood out in their positional drills. Legit looked very quick off the snap, you know, and hitting the pads, and that guy is a player. And then Florida State also had their pro day as well. We talked about Christian Ponder. He actually threw to one of my favorite receivers of all time, the Reverend Isaac Bruce, was there catching balls. But, you know, the one thing with Christian Ponder is that what a lot of people wanted to see out of him was if he can throw the deep pass. And he did a very good job at that. He threw very well downfield. The 290-pound Rodney Hudson also fared well in positional drills. He's being looked at as more of a center from a lot of teams. Defensive end Marcus White also worked out. He's more of a lean edge rusher. You know, probably a late round guy, maybe a priority free agent, but, you know, he looked pretty decent out there. And then also Mr. Alexander, Ochuco Genji at the defensive back, and Ryan McMahon, all of those guys were also on hand at the Florida State University Pro Day.
You just wanted to say those names, particularly Mr. Alexander, right? You know, who's got a first name like that? You're, you know, excuse me, sir, Mr. to you. Mr. to everyone, that's his name. All right, and before we bring Bo on to talk about Patrick Peterson and why he should be the first overall pick, I just want to let everybody out there know about the On the Clocks we're doing, both the podcast as well as the online digital reports. Gives you all the information on the teams that you need for the offseason to get ready for the NFL draft. Monday's show was hosted by our man Joe Everett. He had Jim Thomas on from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch talking some Rams football. Tuesday was Reverend, was you, as well as our man Bo Marchant. You guys broke down the Miami Dolphins on Tuesday. Yesterday I hosted Tanya Ganjuli from the Florida Times Union came on. In about 35 minutes, we'll be talking some Oakland Raiders with Jerry McDonald of the Oakland Tribune. He's also part of the Inside the Raiders blog that you can read online. So he follows the Raiders. So we're going to be talking a little Oakland football. I mean, quickly, you know, Rev, you know, my kind of feeling is Miami, Jacksonville, Oakland. I really don't see any of those three teams as necessarily ready to make the next step. I think Jacksonville and Oakland kind of did the best they could do last year to go 8-8. I don't really think they're necessarily a team on the rise. Well, the Rams do kind of seem like a team on the uptick.
Yeah, the Rams need some pieces, but they have some good leadership there, a great general manager, a good head coach, and they do have their franchise quarterback. If they can get some more mileage out of Steven Jackson, if they can get themselves a big play wide receiver, maybe some help over at linebacker, I think they could be a playoff team. And let's face it, in that division, why not? You know, it's not very strong. You know, the other team, and I agree with you on the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I agree with you on the Miami Dolphins. I don't see any great things on the horizon for either one of those teams. But the Oakland Raiders last year, and we're going to get into it later on, I know that they were 8-8, but they could have easily have been a 10-win or 11-win team. You know, they lost to some poor teams. They lost to Arizona. They lost to San Francisco, some close games. So I think that that's a team right there that's got a lot of talent, that if Hugh Jackson is the real deal and he actually can communicate with his players just like Tom Cable did, I think that's a team on the rise. But, you know, it remains to be seen.
As you said, we'll talk about that a little more. Go to NFLDraftBible.com. You can download the first 16 team on the clocks. And quickly, we'll bring Bo Marchant on. Got about 3 minutes left, Bo, for you to close out the show. Patrick Peterson, we led with it. Could be the number one overall pick. You kind of wrote about this before anybody else did. Talk to us, baby. Tell us why he should go number one overall.
Well, one, I think he's the only player at his position that is beyond, I guess, more talented than any other guy at the position and maybe in the entire draft. And I put in the piece that you can find at the NFL Draft Bible. You know, Patrick Peterson is an elite talent. He might be the best defensive back we've seen in the last 20 years. And there's a little chart on the site that shows you passing from 1990 to 99, Dan, compared to 2000 to 2010. 11,000 total yards more per season on average over the last two decades, from 90 to the 2000s. And then last year was the highest yardage ever through the air, 113,450 yards. So a guy like Peterson's a rare commodity. And like I say in the piece, I mean, usually the rarest of all things is the most sought after. Teams are a little hesitant to throw that number one pick down on a guy like Peterson, but he's a game changer, and he also returns punts.
Oh, yeah, dynamic special teams player. I think another interesting point you brought up, Bo, in your research was the bustability to other positions as opposed to corner.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the interesting thing is if you go back, there were seven defensive backs taken in the side, the top five picks. And if you go back, you have Deion Sanders, Terrell Buckley, Sean Springs, Quentin Jamier, Charles Woodson, I think, and Terrence Newman. The only one of those guys who was that you could label was a bust was Bruce Pickett by the Falcons. Other than that, those guys are all quality cover corners. And you have Deion Sanders going into the Hall of Fame, and you would assume Charles Woodson is well on his way. So, like I say in the piece, that's a pretty good batting average. You have seven players taken in the top five at that position, and two of them will, one of them we already know, but another one well on his way. So two Hall of Fame guys out of the seven is pretty good. And Peterson, besides him being physically gifted, he's a big, strong quarter. Spent some time with him, and I mean, it's not like I hang out with every single pick, but I see enough guys, I talk to enough people. He's the real deal, very sound kid, and he's a leader, Dan. And I think that's the most, he wants to be the best. He wants to lead by the correct way. And anyone who comes into contact with him, you walk a lot of saying, hey, this kid is the total package.
All right, Bo, thanks a lot for giving us a couple of minutes. We're about to wrap up. And if anything, even if Bo doesn't convince you why Peterson should go number one, I think he convinces you why you shouldn't say no to him going number one just because he's the corner. Talk to you next week, NFL Draft Digest, next Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Time. We are out.